Good morning, everyone. We're going to call a meeting of the Board of Supervisors to order. Today is Thursday, October 17th, 2019. It is just 8:30 a.m. We're in the Community Center at Sierra Room at 851 East William Street in Carson City. We're also streaming on the internet. If you get cable, you're on the government access channel. Could we have a roll call, Aubrey? Thanks. How are you this morning?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Supervisor Giomi. Sorry about that. Supervisor
Bonkowski. You had it right the first time.
Supervisor Bonkowski.
Here.
Supervisor Bagwell.
Here.
Supervisor Barrett.
Here.
Mayor Kroll.
Here. Thank you, Aubrey. We call in a good friend, Mark Sear, of the Salvation Army, to get us started today. Good morning, Mark.
Let's pray. Father, we come to before you humbly asking your presence. Enter this room and bless this meeting. Encourage our leaders and strengthen them. Bless their staff as well, and all of our city employees, our law enforcement officers, and our first responders as well. Lord, we pray for you to guide our leaders to put what's best for our city and its people first. Bless them and give them wisdom and understanding. Father, we pray these things in the precious name of Jesus. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Mark. Well done. Would you join me in the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Okay, let's now take up item number 5 on the agenda. This is public comment. The public is invited at this time to comment on and discuss any topic that is relevant to or within the authority of this public body. Good morning. How are we doing? Okay, that's all right. Got it.
First of all, I want to say I watch all the board meetings, and I've been very impressed with them and what you've been doing and everything. So I want to say I appreciate that. before I tell you what I'm concerned about, and it's, I don't know if you have any control over it or not, but I live off of West Long Street on La Mirada,
yeah,
off of the Anderson Ranch. And
say,
we've
say
got,
your name for the record.
Oh, Molly Bundy Terrell, sorry.
Bundy, we got you. I know, but just so they pick
no,
up.
No, I know. I get it. Okay, it's, right. I feel like I'm living in Tumbleweed City, and the weeds are just incredible this morning, especially because of, and I didn't know, and I'm not saying you can do this, but if you can ask the Andersons at least to pay for somebody to come and check on the fall. It's not any time except in the fall, but they're just all over. And with the limited garbage cans that we have anymore, they're just almost impossible to even stuff in there. And I noticed on Long Street, I don't know if you've noticed, if you've gone by there, okay, you have. So I don't have to explain all the tumbleweeds that are around the trailers.
We're
and everything.
Pretty well aware that there's a problem there.
Okay.
And Molly, and we've been talking, I know that the city manager has sent a letter to the Andersons saying, we got to do something to because it's just unfair to the neighbors there. I mean, the Andersons are concerned that they can't mow the property there,
mm-hmm.
But it's just creating a mess for the residents around there, and you're not the only one. I think everybody who butts on the Anderson Ranch there has the same problem. So, you know, we've asked Anderson, you know, to stand up and help because it's not the neighbor's fault, and we're well aware of the it's a pretty gross problem that you guys have to go through there.
Okay, just as long as I'm sure you probably were aware of it, that well, just driving
but
there.
It never hurts to come up and say it again.
Okay. All right. Thanks so much. I appreciate you taking care of it.
I say that correctly, City Manager? Uh-huh. All right. All right. Good morning. Hey, I got somebody new here, right?
Good morning. Diane Baker from the Carson City Library for the record. And we're pleased to be here to introduce our new library director who came on staff October 2nd. So here beside me is Todd Colgrove, our new library director.
Good morning, Todd. Welcome. Welcome aboard.
Good morning.
I guess that's a welcome aboard.
It's an honor to be pulling on the same rope with each of you. Thank you, sir.
That'll get you something in the budget.
Hope springs eternal. Thank you, sir.
New roof, you know, maybe a new library, something like that.
By golly. We're doing our best to support the community here. Just wanted to make sure that you could put a name to the face and who to throw under the bus when something needs done.
So do you want to talk about anything about what you want to do at the library? Or it's just up to you.
You know, I appreciate the opportunity. I think it's early. I don't know what I don't know. I just came on board, and I'm having lots of conversations. I wanted to thank each of you that came out last Friday to begin the process of telling me what needs, what's broken and what's working, and where do we go from here. But a quick snapshot of my background. I'm a native Nevadan. His family goes back to this part of the woods before it was a state, and so I'm here for the long haul. Looking forward to being a service.
So to the extent that libraries are a record of history, you've got a lot of history to add to it, right?
A lot of that history we probably don't want to talk about, right? Okay. But some of that history.
Todd, thank you, and we look forward to working with you. You know, from my perspective, you know, the library is front and center on a lot of different issues here. And, you know, it's not easy moving into the 21st century when people are looking at digital works instead of the printed word. But there will be always a need for both digital and printed. So,
thank you, sir.
All right. You bet. Welcome. Yeah. Yes. Any other public comments? Anybody want to weigh in? Let me just take it, if I don't see anybody, let me just take a note to say thanks for bearing with me. I missed two board meetings. I went to, with another couple, we went to Europe, to London for 6 nights, and looked around London quite a bit. And then we came back on the Queen Mary 2 for a North Atlantic cruise to New York. Spent a couple nights in New York and then came home. It's something that was in my bucket list to do because I wanted to see, you know, kind of make the trip across the Atlantic like some of our ancestors did, and probably all of our ancestors in one sense. So, you know, that was, thanks for putting up with me. I know Brad's going to.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank you. I saw the headline in the paper today that you negotiated the Brexit deal while you were over there.
I did. Actually, you know, we were walking around Parliament a lot, you know, and anyway,
We want to send you back and make sure you get Catalan their freedom.
That's right. That's right.
That's right.
Maybe Steve will go.
So anyway, but thank you very much, and thanks to the board here for putting up with me and Lori for taking over here while I was gone. So, all right, one other thing on public comment. Emiliano Carrillo, would you stand up, please, back there? How are you doing? Emiliano is a senior, and he's working on a senior project. His project is, I guess, to kind of follow me around and find out what mayors and board of supervisors do. Is that right? Huh? All right. Well, I look forward to having you around, and you'll get a good idea of what's going on. And for this board meeting, Emiliano's already read the board agenda items, and so I asked him to come in and sit here and see what happens at the work sessions for boards. So thank you, Emiliano. We'll do more, okay? All right, let's take up item number 6, possible approval of the minutes of October 3rd. There's a change to it.
Yep.
Okay.
I move to approve the minutes of the Carson City Board of Supervisors for October 3rd, 2019, with previously submitted clarifications on page 7 and 9.
There's a motion and a second on the motion. Let's see. All in favor, did we get that up here?
No.
There's a second. Okay. On the motion, all in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. I don't see it coming up on electronic stuff here. There it is. Okay.
It's just slow.
Just vote. All right. Now let's take up the possible adoption of the agenda. Any changes to the agenda?
No changes.
City manager? Board members, any changes? Anybody? Okay, then we'll take the agenda as published. Let's now move on to the floor and do the special presentations recognize Fire Prevention Week, the letters of service certificates to our city employees and our employee of the quarter. So we'll go from there. Okay. Let's go over here.
I got that. Very nice.
Let's go. Let's see if we can do it. This is a proclamation for Fire Prevention Week, October 6th through the 12th, 2019. And it reads as follows. Whereas the City of Carson City, Nevada is committed to ensuring the safety and security of all those living in and visiting Carson City. And whereas fire is a serious public safety concern both locally and nationally, and homes are the locations where people are at greatest risk from fire. And whereas home fires killed 2,630 people in the United States in 2017, according to the National Fire Protection Association, and fire departments in the United States responded to 357,000 home fires. 357,000 home fires. Whereas the majority of U.S. fire deaths, 4 out of 5, occur at home each year. And whereas the fire death rate per 1,000 homes reported to the U.S. fire departments was 4% higher in 2017 than in 1980. And whereas the smoke alarm sounds, Carson City residents may have, when the smoke alarm sounds, Carson City residents may have less than two minutes to escape to safety. And whereas Carson City's residents who have planned and practiced a home fire escape plan are most prepared and will therefore be more likely to survive a fire. And whereas Carson City residents should make sure everyone in the home knows how to call 911 or the local emergency number from a cell phone or a neighbor's phone. It's important to remember a neighbor's phone. Whereas the 2019 Fire Prevention Week theme, quote, not every hero wears a cape, plan, and practice your escape, effectively serves to remind us that we need to take personal steps to increase our safety from fire. Therefore, I, Robert Crowell, Mayor of Carson City, on behalf of the Board of Supervisors, do hereby proclaim October 6th through the 12th as Fire Prevention Week throughout this community. I urge all the people of Carson City to be aware of their surroundings, look for available ways out in the event of a fire or other emergency, respond when the smoke alarm sounds by exiting the building immediately, and to support the many public safety activities and efforts of Carson City's Fire and Emergency Services during Fire Prevention Week 2019. You know, folks, I've told you before, Sean and Chief and your folks,
You folks do a wonderful job here in Carson City. I mean, you hear me say it all the time, and it's not lost on me, you know, that you guys went up and saved a young man from the second floor, and that's just one incident where our fire protection folks have really been, you know, saved lives. On behalf of all of us, not only is this Fire Prevention Week, but I want to say thanks to our fire department folks and their personnel. Well done, guys. So we'll give you that, a proclamation, and then we'll come back and get a picture. You want to say a few words, or come on?
All right. So we just wanted to take this moment to remind everybody the theme really is plan your escape. So make sure your smoke alarms are working. Test them monthly. Change out the batteries. Usually, even if they're powered off of your electrical system, they usually have a battery backup. So make sure they are working and your CO alarms are working. Sleep with your doors closed. That is your biggest and greatest chance for survival. Smoke is a far greater killer than the fire itself, so it's the products of combustion that will get to us. And then make sure everyone in your family knows how to get out of their house, especially the little ones, and that you have a meeting place so we know everybody's outside, so that we don't have you rushing back in to find somebody. And let us take care of those things. And so with that, turn it back over, man.
Let's get a picture up here. Come on. You got anybody else besides like the two hunches? Okay. All right.
All right, Rachel, make me look good. Don't forget the chief here.
Got it. Thank you.
All right. Hey,
We're going to move right into Employee Recognition Longevity Awards. This one is issued to, who is that back there? Rhonda? Rhonda Price? Come on up here. Rhonda is all things in the assessor's office. Her designation is office specialist, but she does a lot more than just that. Rhonda, on behalf of the Carson City, in appreciation for your 5 years of service to Carson City, thank you very much for what you do, and we look forward to more years. I know now that we've got you in behind the glass wall, you're going to stay forever. So, all right, Rhonda, thanks. And you come on up here. All right. Oh, look at that. All right, see that? Now that is all right. All right, you guys have budget problems too? Come on up here. We're going to get a picture. Anybody else? Come on up. Come on up. Anybody else want to get in the picture? Let's just stay there for 1 second now. Oh, man. I tell you, this, where's Tammy? Tammy, come on up. This is Tammy Jennings, is a recreation program supervisor. Boy, you guys are always busy, aren't you? I mean, sometimes I talk to Jennifer Budge there about, the Parks and Rec Commission, about how many parks we've got, and she says, I really don't know, but it's over 30. You said that, Jen. Okay. You said that. But really, as yesterday when we spoke out at the Schultz Ranch New Park, Carson City, for those of you who don't know, Carson City has more parks per capita than the national average in the United States. More parks than the national average. And I don't need to tell our Parks and Rec folks, and I don't need to tell you, Tammy, I know, that how important parks are for the development of a true community. They do wonderful things just to keep people, give people a place to go in a safe environment to exercise or just relax. And they also make for a healthier community. And so on behalf of a grateful community, thanks for your 20 years of service. 20 years. So you've seen a lot. You're probably back there when there are only 5 parks. Come on. All right, Tammy. Thank you very much.
Thank
all
you.
Right. All right. All right. Don't take that.
up here real quick. I know they're going to take that. Oh, I know. Put this back here, man. All right. We'll do this, and then we'll do the play of the quarter, too?
Yeah.
If
any family or friends
who
want to get into the picture.
We'll do the play of the
quarter.
Yeah, you
got it. Perfect. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
excuse me. Darren Anderson. Where's Darren? Come on up, Darren. Good to see you this morning. Darren, you want to talk about the employee of the quarter?
Yeah, sure.
All right.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so I work with Brian Doyle, not a manager of him, coworker, and he's just been really incredible for a few projects we've had that have had tight deadlines to do. These projects were ones that we didn't have the time to send out to private consultants to take care for us, so he was the guy to do them, and he got them done really quick.
So Brian, come on up. So the computer programs you designed, what were they?
Actually, they're civil design of sidewalks and what all did we do? Water replacements and
road replacement, sewer water, sidewalks.
We do a little bit of everything.
A little bit of everything. Well, thank you, Brian, and on behalf of all of us here in Carson City, thanks for thinking out of the box and thanks for going the extra step. That's a good sign for our community that we have a lot of dedicated. All of our employees are dedicated employees, you know, to make Carson City a better place. And what you've done here stands over and above that. And so I want to read this proclamation by the Board of Supervisors recognizing you as a civil engineer, in your capacity of civil engineering designer, as the employer of the quarter. And it reads as follows. Whereas Carson City's quality of life attracts talented and loyal employees, and whereas every day Carson City employees put to use their broad array of skills and expertise with efficiency and integrity for the benefit of everyone in our city. And whereas Carson City values its employees and acknowledges that recognizing employees for their hard work and dedication is critical to the future health and growth of our city. And I'll add on here the development of a cohesive bond for our workforce to make Carson City a better place to live. And whereas we owe a substantial debt of gratitude to Carson City employees and applaud those who go above and beyond in their loyalty and ability. And whereas Brian Doyle, civil engineering designer, completed 3 construction plan sets within a 6-month period, which typically require hiring 3 separate consulting firms and 6 to 9 months to complete, thereby saving the city money, as well as allowing city staff to meet the funding obligation deadlines and timeliness to complete the work, thus contributing to the fulfillment of the city's mission, values, and vision. And whereas it is an honor to be selected for this award by your co-workers, and it speaks highly of your work performance and how it is perceived by others. Now, therefore, Robert Crowe, Mayor of Carson City, celebrate the special trust and confidence in the loyalty, integrity, and ability of Brian Doyle, and do hereby proclaim Brian Doyle to be Employee of the Quarter for Carson City, and encourage everyone to join me in this special recognition. Brian, thank you very much for doing it. Okay. Well, say a few words.
I'd like to say thank you to Darren and the rest of my team on the design team of Public Works and all of Public Works. They're all great. I come in every day, everybody's got a smile on their face, and it's just a joy to work with you all. So thank you very much.
See that? All right. That's what makes a good cohesive unit for our employees. So, and not to just, you've got a proclamation there. So do you want this money too? Or the proclamation enough? Well, on behalf of all of us, here's $200. And I think this comes from, you, Nancy, the money? No? City manager's account? Okay. Very good. All right. Let's go back here and get a picture. Come on.
Oh, boy, look at the Okay, let's call a meeting up here, back on the dais. Let's take up item number nine, take up the consent agenda. Any member of the public want anything pulled from the consent agenda for individual discussion? Seeing any member of the board want anything pulled from the consent agenda? I don't see any. We'll take a motion to approve the consent agenda as published.
I move to approve the consent agenda consisting of items 9A, 10A, and 11A.
Second. There's a motion and a second on the motion discussion. Hearing and seeing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Pose nay. Let's see if it comes up here. There it is. Okay, let's now take up, that completes the consent agenda. Let's take up item 13. This is for possible action discussion and possible action to appoint one member to the Airport Authority to fill a pilot position for a term ending October 2023. We have two folks who applied. Go ahead,
Correct. Nancy. And we'll have Timothy will come up for the
Pardon
first.
Me?
Timothy will come up for the first interview.
Where's Timothy? Come on up. Michael, you can come back in when we finish this one.
Yes, sir. I understand.
All right. I thought you were going to take him out there. Good morning.
Good morning.
So you want to serve on the airport board?
Yeah, I think I do.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. I know you got some in the application that you filed, but tell us a little bit.
Okay, maybe bullet points here, just so I can kind of
Sure, get warmed up. Yeah, you bet.
Okay.
Push
better? Better?
Yep.
Okay. Well, first off, my name is Tim Pulis. I've been a Nevada resident since 58.
All here in Carson City, right?
I live in South Reno.
Okay. All right.
I live in South Reno. I want to start off by saying I do have some experience working with government agencies. I've worked with NDOT, the Transportation Services Authority of Nevada, the Interstate Commerce Commission with and the federal level. I operate a family business. One of our businesses is a development business. I've been working with the city, county, state, federal, and all the regulations for quite a long time developing our industrial facilities in the state of Nevada. We started 41 years ago. I'm the founder of Pulis Moving and Storage Company, Pulis Records Management Company, Sierra Mayflower Services, United Van Lines, Pulis Records Management, and then we have a development company called ATAAP that builds buildings throughout Nevada and Utah.
I think I know your father.
Yeah, everyone knew my father. Yeah, St. Al. So, I graduated with a degree in business finance from the University of Puget Sound in Tacoma, Washington. So I do have experience in finance, human resources, marketing, operations, and, you know, we have a fairly successful business. We were the largest moving company in the state of Nevada. We have the largest privately owned records management service in the state of Nevada. We service Carson City daily. As a volunteer, I was a former board of directors of the Sparks YMCA when they first started that in Sparks, Nevada, when I was raising my children. I was appointed to the Wells Fargo, Nevada Community Board of Directors, right when all the crap hit the fan, when Wells Fargo started getting all their bad press, and they asked me to come in as a community person to help try to mediate some of that community service issues. And to be candid, that term is over next week. I'll be done with that next week. I've done dozens of Rotary International projects. I know, Bob, you're a Rotarian. We have we share a friendship with Steve Lewis, who's also a leader in Rotary. My wife's a big leader in Rotary, so we go all over the world doing Rotary service projects, from youth projects to health projects, one of our passions. I'm a volunteer for the Young Experimental Aircraft Association, Young Eagles. I fly kids around every quarter out of the Carson City Airport, which I enjoy a lot. And I'm currently the commander of the Carson City Sheriff's Aero Squadron. We provide search and transport services for Ken Furlong, and we enjoy a good relationship with him. So this is a pilot position.
Right. So what do you want to do with the pilot position? What do you want to do when you get on the board?
Good question. Yeah. So let me just back up. I'll start by saying I've been a pilot for 9 years. I have 1,500 hours. I'm an instrument-rated multi-engine pilot. I'm a tenant at Carson City Airport and the Jet Ranch project, and I've been currently reviewing the 2019 draft master plan that's been going around for years. And I'll tell you, that's an ominous budget and draft. I guess the powers and duties of this board is basically to maintain and guide the growth of the Carson City Airport, for one thing. The second duty is to make all operational decisions for the airport powers and duties. Now, as a pilot, I'm going to focus on my relationships with all the different pilots and aircraft owners on that airport and try to be their voice and try to bring to the table their concerns, their input, because I share that common knowledge of what it takes to be a pilot, what it takes to be an aircraft owner and operator. So I would hope to be able to bring to the board the concerns associated with those people. I believe that my best skill, if you want to call it a skill, is that I'm a collaborator. I'm not political. I don't have an agenda. I don't have any ambitions. I don't have an ambition to be on this board, but I do feel that I would be able to represent a lot of my pilot friends, a lot of the people that operate airplanes, and share their concerns in a constructive, professional manner so that as the authority makes decisions, that their voices are being heard.
Very good.
That's about it.
Pretty comprehensive. Before we start, let me just say, Pulis Moving and Storage has been a long time business in Northern Nevada. Mm-hmm. And I ran into them pretty good when I was working back at the Public Utilities Commission. Yeah.
That's right.
So, and I know your dad, Al, and so I just want, regardless of how this comes out, you know, your family's done a lot in this world, so.
Well, thank you.
Stacey, you want to start?
Sure. Thank you, Tim, for offering to put yourself out there. Appreciate it. Based on what you know about the airport, mm-hmm. what do you see as the biggest challenge for the airport and the airport authority over the next 1 to 3 years, the biggest challenge they'll face? Over the next 1 to 3 years?
Well, I wouldn't have known a thing about it 2 weeks ago until I was asked to consider this and I started studying. So as I study, What I see to be critical is the ability to properly position the airport to qualify for all these massive federal grants and to have enough cash on hand to do the small match associated with those grants. I had no idea how this works until I started studying the budget and the plan. So I was looking, you know, specifically in the short-term projects, which are the new fencing security projects and the ambitious lighting project that would enable the airport to be able to accommodate corporate jets at night that has kept a lot of the corporate people away from us because they can't do an instrument approach after it's not authorized on the flight charts through the FAA because of the inadequate lighting associated. So they have a system called the MALSAR, which provides rabbit lighting and some lighting up on the hills that allow the airport to qualify for this type of a service. This could bring some significant economic impact into the airport. It's a significant option. The trouble is, it's a $4.5 million project just for that small amount. And so our match is pretty small. It's only about 7 or 8%. But to get NDOT and to get the feds on board is a massive, cohesive project. And I see they're making very good headway. I was looking at the budget. I was looking at talking with Ken Bowen about it. And I think they're on the right path. I think they're on the right track. But, man, it's a real stringent process to get the FAA to go ahead and release those funds. I think we'll be able to do it.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Morning, Tim.
Hi, Brad.
Other than building hangars at the airport, mm-hmm. Give us some of your ideas regarding economic development opportunities at the airport.
Well, what's missing at the Carson Airport is there's no retail. We don't have a restaurant. We don't have any kind of other retail opportunities on some of that adjacent street access points that most airports of this type have that I visit around the country because I visit a lot of airports. So I think if we can attract some type of retail activity on some of those forward things, particularly restaurants, a restaurant and or compatible type of operations. That would be one area. FBOs, if we can get a little bit more high-end jet traffic into this airport, there's more room for more FBO maintenance. There's more room for FBO services, not just storage, but the full services that go associate with it. Mike Golden's doing a good job with his Mountain West, who's your chairman right now. But if there's a lot more activity, there'd be more room for more FBO activity, and that would bring revenue to the airport.
Lord. Oh boy, let's see. All my questions are already asked. I'm going to try another, or you've already hit on something. So maybe I'll just try something different. Can you tell me how comfortable you are reading and interpreting financial statements and then putting plans together to implement the master plan? Because it all kind of goes together.
Well, I've been doing it for 41 years, running my family business. However, I have to be honest, I defer to my CFO for most of the consulting. And I would do the same here. And I know that you have an excellent attorney that is working, your partner in crime.
Yeah, I'm retired now, but he's a former partner.
He is retired. That's right. Okay. I don't profess to be an accountant, but I've been reading and operating on financial statements my entire career and with relative success. So, yes, I can read them, I can analyze them, but I am not an accountant. Okay.
John?
Thank you. Tim, I'm the Board of Supervisors liaison to the Airport Authority, Airport Authority member, and the people to my right have taken some of my questions. So I'll ask you, since I came out of the communications business, I was in print for a long time and did some broadcasting as well. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about your own communication skills regarding this type of a situation where you're sitting on a government board? Are you confident that you can handle the communications part of the thing? Because a seven-member board has to have a lot of interaction and, of course, interact with the public.
Well, I don't think that I could have been successful in my career without being a good communicator. But I defer to the word collaborator more. I am much more interested in working as a team. I think that there's synergy associated with people working together. Unlike a lot of our politics in this world, I don't like the adversarial point. I like the collaborative point. I like to get people to get on board, get people to work together, come up with common goals and common priorities. And so I think that my skill set is in that area. I don't have to be the leader. I just have to be the collaborator.
Thank you.
That's how I would approach this position.
Tim, anything you want to add?
Anything? Well, I want to know if Stacy's related to John Giomi.
Yes.
I've known him since a young man. We lived in a little house on Sierra Street together. Dorothea Madsen was our landlord.
Junior or John Senior?
Well, he's about 69 about now, so that would be Junior, I think.
Junior.
Yeah, out of Yarrington area, right?
Yeah, he's a distant cousin, yes.
Okay, distant cousin, all right. No. Other than that, no, I'm just happy to have this opportunity. If you think I'm the right person, please select me. If you think that someone has a better skill, please select them. That's the way I look at it.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thanks. You're welcome to sit and listen. We have one more applicant.
Okay.
Let's take a place back there and see where it goes. Morning, Michael.
Good morning, Mayor.
How are you doing today?
I'm fantastic this morning.
Good.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You bet. Michael, as we get started here, I know you've been in these drills before, but and I also know you're quite active in the pilot arena out at the airport and do a lot of flying yourself. Why don't you tell us what you think is going right or wrong with the airport right now?
It's going right or wrong?
What would you do? In other words, what would you seek to do to promote or not to promote if you got on the airport board?
Well, the airport is mostly going right, not a good word, but going in a good direction, if you will. Parts that are not working quite well is the gate access problem of tailgating, which Ken has done an admirable job of educating people, and there's still work to be done. I also understand there's a project to redo all the fencing and perhaps new gate access. Perhaps things that can be done better is we need more flight schools, which are always problematic from a business point of view anyways. The businesses on the field seem to be doing okay. I don't run around and ask them how they're doing. But from the crowd that I hang out with, people are enjoying the airport and they're able to do their desired tasks and have enjoyment from the airport, which is the whole point of the airport.
But just one last question. I didn't ask this earlier, but where are you on creating a night IFR?
Well, it'd probably be a good idea. I understand it's in the works, but Mayor, I'll be honest, I don't like IFR, and I'm not going to do it at night either. So it's going to be useful to a very small population.
All right. Stacy, you want to start again?
Okay. Sure. Michael, thank you for applying and putting yourself out there. Appreciate it. Based on what you know about the airport, what do you see as the biggest challenge the airport or the airport authority is going to face over the next 1 to 3 years?
Integrating the airport into the community life of Carson City.
And so elaborate on that a little bit.
Well, a community airport, which is what we are, should be, in my opinion, considered a recreational asset available to the general public. I think you'll find that in most towns with community airports, most of the towns don't even know they have an airport. And that should be remedied. It's definitely an asset to the community.
Hi, Michael. First, have you had a chance to review the new master plan?
Not the new one, no.
Okay. My question for you is, other than building hangars at the airport, what ideas do you have regarding economic development opportunities?
Well, considering this airport, the hangars are what attract people to use the airport from an economic perspective. But I think we could enhance, or maybe not a good word, but sell the airport more to businesses that actually need an aircraft in their operations rather than it being a nice edge. Find those that make it a necessity. We still have the Carson City industrial area, which is an animal from many years ago, which I don't see mentioned in the press very often. I'm sure you all are aware of it, right? Everyone shake their heads and say yes.
Okay.
Cool. Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you tell me how comfortable you are reading and interpreting financial statements and then using that to help implement the master plan?
How comfortable? Well, I'm comfortable reading financial statements. I can be pretty good at asking questions. In the corporate world, I'll be honest, the first thing I read is management notes rather than the numbers. Now, we're also getting into government accounting, which is kind of a specialized area. Clearly, the resulting financial results had better pretty much match the plan. Otherwise, particularly for government entities, you get yourself in a box where you can't do anything.
Okay. John?
Thank you for applying. I'm curious. I came out of the news business. I was in communications, and I am member from this board who sits on the airport authority as a liaison. So I'm interested in how you feel about your own communication skills and abilities to work with others in long communications lines. She's the numbers person, I'm the word person.
How do I answer that? I certainly can speak up when necessary, and hopefully I use complete sentences and logical paragraphs. Whenever I prepare written material, I find that about your fourth pass or fifth pass is when you should be ready to go. I'm always embarrassed to find mistyped words in my communications, which is you're usually writing them in an emotional moment.
Good answer. Good writing is rewriting. Thank you.
That's actual experience, Mr. Barrett.
Michael, let me just ask what to clarify questions from what I hear here. Do you think there's a difference between an airport that serves as a community airport as opposed to an airport that's not only a community airport but is a business development driver economic development?
A difference?
Yeah, is there a difference?
Entry goals, but if an entity decides that their airport is only for economic development, then you're essentially isolating the airport from the community when it's serving. Or better yet, from the community that actually owns the airport. Carson City owns the airport. It belongs to all the citizens of Carson City, not to just those that can benefit from the airport.
Okay. Anything you want to add, Michael?
Well, thank you for the opportunity, and of course, I certainly hope you all will appoint me to serve the public, the general public, on the Carson City Airport Authority.
Very, very good. Okay. All right. You're welcome to listen to the discussion here because
okay. Shall I turn the mic off?
The road. That's okay. Whatever you want to do is fine, Michael. It's good to see you. By the way, what do you fly on these days?
I still have the B-model Bonanza.
Okay.
I've had it for, well, as you know, you probably don't want to find out how long you've owned it and what you've been doing. You just want to prepare to go out and fly it and don't think about your past adventures or everything it took to keep it together.
Very good. Thanks, Michael. Okay. All right, board. Anybody want to start?
Sure.
Or do you want me to start? You guys can start if you want.
You always go last. You should go first.
I'll go first. What? Huh? Well, I think both of these applicants are extremely well qualified. I know Michael's been out at that airport for a long time, and I do know the Pulitz family. I know not well, but I know of them, and I've known of them for a long time, back when I was doing active practice of law. And I guess, you know, what my concern is, the airport is developing into not just a community asset, but an asset that can be an economic development driver, because at the end of the day, the economic development requires a city, the airport, to produce some revenue. And that will help build that airport out there. My sense is that Tim Pulitz was probably the better answer on that, and so that's where I would fall down right now. But I think they're both admirable applicants. So
I think they both did a great job, too. I liked that Tim had actually done some research and some homework and read the master plan and really tried to find out where the airport's missions currently were. And so I think he was also spot on that one of the roles is the pilot. I really liked your comment that you were the voice of the pilots and that he would work with all the other pilots to see what would integrate and bring that voice to the board. So for that reason, I'd like to appoint Timothy because I thought he was just more well-rounded in the overall
Go ahead.
Go, John.
Oh, I was going to say, if I could go next, it's probably my only opportunity to make those two guys irrelevant. I'm going to go with Tim as well.
Okay. All right. we'll take a motion then to appoint Tim Pulitz as the airport member.
Just to prove to John that I'm not irrelevant, I will go with the board just because I think it's important to be collaborative up here, and I'm willing to concede that both Tim and Mike did a great job. I really did like Mike's answer about that airport being a community airport, and if the vote goes Tim's way, I'd like him to keep that in his head because I think it's very important that our community feel like that airport belongs to them. But the economic component needs to drive that because the airport as a community resource can't survive without the economic development side. But I really take to heart what Michael said about it being a community asset. So thank you.
I think, Brad, you want to kick pass?
No, you guys got to come.
All right. Motion's in order.
I move to appoint Timothy Pulitz to the pilot position for a term ending in October 2023.
Thank you. There's a motion and a second on the motion. Discussion? Hearing and seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Carried. Okay. Michael, thank you very much.
Thank you. And thank you, too.
We'll see you in the skies.
From a distance.
That's true. Yeah, that's a good answer.
That's a very good answer. Yeah. All right. Let's now take up the item with respect to the school resource officers. This is 14 Alpha. Who's going to do this? Jerome, you doing it all?
Yes, sir.
They put you up here for this? Where's the sheriff? He should be out here getting beat up.
That's why I'm here.
So the sheriff hired you to take the bullet. Okay. All right. I got you. Go ahead,
All right. Well, thank you, sir. My name is Jerome Tushman. I'm the assistant sheriff. I'm here talking to you today about a grant that the school district has secured, along with an agreement that the DA's office has helped us to get. I suspect that you'll have some questions, so I'll just do a quick summary. This will currently, here in Carson City, we have three SROs. They're behind me. And then we take a community approach to the safety and well-being of children. So not only do we have the SROs, but we also look at people in the community to include the health and human services, social services, nonprofits. We also have Chief Renwick from the University Police here in the audience today, who I think represents that we have a focus on our educational facilities, not only to have people be safe, but have them feel safe as they go in and out of what they're doing. And the grant here today, and I have the person who's applied for the grant next to me who has any details, but essentially what it's going to take is our current staff of three SROs and going to be adding one additional deputy and one supervisor. As you can see from the paperwork here, we're going to be focusing on all the schools, which comes out to be about 7,500 children, but also we see that our greatest effect is going to be at the middle schools. This is the place where children are going to be going from small children to young adults, and the places where we can do it is going to be there. I'm also going to talk real quickly about the human beings behind this, because the people who do this, you know, I think we hire really good deputies, and then we find the right ones for the positions. And what we found is the person who has the position SRO has the right temperament, the right savvy. They're able to communicate not only with the young kids, but the high school students, staff, and parents. And I think as we start looking at this, and if approved, we're really excited about the things that they're going to be doing, because they're not security guards. They have a wide range of very important duties that they're doing, and the personalities complement that. And one of them is that they're the pro-social mentors. They're the ones who are out there talking to the kids on a daily basis and being very proactive, keeping the good kids good, and then taking the ones that are on the edge and going over to Alley Shop and maybe keeping them on the straight and narrow. So with that, I'm going to turn over to the board for whatever questions we can answer for you.
You know what? Let me just ask here. The grant money, does that fully pay for the two officers or not?
Yes, for both the supervisor, the sergeant, as well as the deputy. And right. It is fully paid with the exception of beyond salary and such. So, for example, overtime is not covered under this particular one, and that's something that we can absorb with our current budget.
So the school district got the grant. They're actually going to be paying for the SROs, right?
Yes, sir.
I think the agreement pretty well in black and white says if this grant is not continued on, that, you know, we're going to terminate those positions or we're going to find to do something else there. But it's important that people know that if we go down this road for 2 years, that you know that we're not locking ourselves in for things we can't handle at the end of 2 years. Go.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, go. I'm sorry. Now we, yeah.
Hi, I'm Valerie Dockery. I'm the Director of Grants and Special Projects for the Carson City School District.
Good to see you again. Good to see you again, Valerie.
Thank you. And it was really my pleasure to work with the Sheriff's Department on this project. It has been really a wonderful collaboration. This money comes out of a large pot that the legislature put aside for school safety. It also includes facilities improvements, which Carson City will be implementing $500,000 in facilities improvements out of this project as well. I feel, and I think the district feels very strongly, that the governor and the legislature will continue in the next biennium. This is not the only district in the state to receive these SROs. So I don't see that down the line the legislature is going to pull that money back and leave people hanging with that funding. So I feel good coming into even the next biennium that there'll still be a support around the state for school resource officers and improved safety in schools across the state of Nevada.
Very good. Okay.
Mr. Mayor, if I could continue on. We were optimistic that this funding is going to continue. However, if worst case scenario happens, we do have contingencies, and every deputy that's hired knows that if they're the last one to be hired, they will be the first one on the list per the a contract agreements as well as city policy. So we hope that will never happen, but we're realistic and we understand by accepting this, we're taking on that responsibility.
Well, I hope, regardless of how this vote comes out here today, I hope that the state government really recognizes the importance of SROs, because they do more than just a face in a uniform walking up and down the hall to maybe scare people. They're not that at all. They're there to provide a friendly ear and to make sure that people, one, students feel safe, and two, feel that there's somebody they can talk to in case there's an issue. And I know our school resource officers do a lot of work. And my own view of it is that they've done a tremendous job in terms of educating students on, how to make the right choices and also be a friendly ear, and knowing that the police are not their enemies, that they're there to help. And I think that's terribly important for society. That's my own sense. So,
thank you, sir.
Anybody else want to weigh in here? Valerie, you don't have to if you don't want to.
Well, I just want to say that in working on this project, we actually pulled last year's discipline data for the Carson High School, and we saw a major decrease in use of controlled substances, possessions, use of alcohol, dangerous weapons, etc. And I think a lot of that is attributed to that partnership. We're not seeing those things on campus. That's not to say they're not in the community, but we're not seeing them on campus because of the strong partnership between the SROs and how the students view them and their role on our campuses. So I think we are really seeing, we also do a student climate survey where we're seeing improved school, and that's where the students take a survey, and we're seeing improved responses there. And I don't think that that's an accident. I think those two things are highly correlated.
Very good. Okay. Any public comment on this issue? Mr. French, come on up. Just stay there, Valerie and Joan. Just stay. Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor, Supervisor. Mm-hmm. Welcome back.
I'm glad to be back, I think.
Thank you. Well, hopefully, this morning, NPR brought up the statistics, and I think you probably heard them, suicide rates in children from as low as 7, I think they related to 14, are up nationally by a huge number. And so I think this is an awesome opportunity for that intervention that's so needed. So thank you for putting this through. I hope it all will happen well. Thank you.
Thanks, Tommy. Okay.
Denny French, Carson City, Nevada. Excuse me.
And just because I represent the sheriff today, I'll keep talking.
I could keep talking.
I did read a little bit about the CDC report also, and we've kind of noticed it. I think everyone here on the board is aware very much of safe waste and some of the calls we're getting out of it. The number one is bullying by far, and that keeps our SROs busy. But secondary is depression and suicidal behavior of our children. So I'm just going to reiterate, Mr. French, thank you for bringing that topic up, and that's something that our SROs and the school district and the community are facing on a daily basis.
Thank you, Denny.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you.
I want to just reiterate also that we also have 14 licensed school social workers in our schools. We have 4 at Carson High School, 2 at Carson Middle, 1 at Eagle Valley, and 1 at each of our elementaries, and 1 at Pioneer, full-time licensed social workers. And they work hand-in-hand with the SROs on these issues. And so they're there to support students as well. And that has been a really high level of support for students. So that's all part of this, all of this safety and student welfare piece that's come out of the legislature, that we're able to provide that support.
Very good. Board members, anything? Are we ready for a vote?
Questions
in order. Oh, the lights are on. Okay. I even forgot the lights.
You need a vacation.
I need a vacation. I probably should just leave permanently. That's all right.
Jerome, can you speak to why this didn't come before the board and just put on the record
before, as we usually get the opportunity to discuss and suss out the approval of the application beforehand?
This particular grant didn't come through the Sheriff's Office. It was broached to us by the school district, and they have their own rules and policies and expectations. So I do believe that once it came to our attention, there was some communication with the board, and here we are with the formal vote today.
And can you also confirm that, as you indicated, that you won't be asking for increase in budget for overtime, extra equipment, or equipment costs, correct?
Correct. That we can absorb that in our current budget.
To what Valerie spoke of with the decrease in on-campus drug and alcohol and incidents in general, you may not know this, but are you? I suspect that, as she said, that is just moving off campus, which is good. Are you seeing an increase in those activities off campus and around the schools, or is it a matter of you know, it was always happening off the school grounds? Now we've just prevented it from happening on the school grounds. And you know, it's curious, curiosity more than anything else.
As backup, I asked Allie Bannister to be here today, and she can probably, if she so chooses, give you a little bit more what she's seeing in the community outside the schools. The data I have today is only about the school system, so I'll allow Allie to give a little bit more information on that.
Good morning, Allie.
Good morning. Allie Bannister, for the record. I would say that it is probably been about the same. I'm not sure we've seen an increase in incidents that are occurring off campus.
Okay, thank you. And finally, since you mentioned the SROs, and I know they're here, would you mind introducing them and giving us an opportunity and the community an opportunity to meet them? I know they probably don't want to do that, but it's good for us.
Please come on up.
I'm Sergeant Earl Mays with the Sheriff's Office.
How you doing, Sergeant? Good to see you, Earl. Good.
Thanks. I have Deputy Dean Williams. He's at the high school. Deputy Jared Adams. He's at Carson Middle School. And Deputy Liz Granada, and she's at Eagle Valley Middle School.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Oh, Brad.
The $626,160.05, that's the grant or the portion of the grant that's just for the salaries and benefits. You also spoke about the capital improvements that are being done. There's a little over $500,000 in those, and we have information on them in here, but that's not part of the grant money that we're being asked to approve today, correct?
That's correct. They're actually, they rolled a lot of different funding sources into one grant application, but they kept the budget pieces separate. So there was the facilities piece, there was this piece for the SROs, and then there was also additional piece for social workers. So those are all, but there was one application with like six parts to it, basically. Yeah.
Thank you. And I think that we as the board need to be really honest with ourselves. If we want to go down this road, if the grant funding ends in 2 years, and this, you know, we've added these two additional officers and they've been in place for 2 years and we're now dependent upon their services, I don't see us coming back from that. So I think that we need to be aware of that, that at some point that this is something that could come back and we would have to fund through the city or through, as our other agreement, 50% from the school district, 50% from the city. I mean, there's a lot of different ways that we could look at this, but I just think that we would be delusional to think that if we go down this road, we're going to backtrack in 2 years. So just wanted to put that out there. And I'm not saying that we won't approve it and it's not a good idea. I'm just saying that we need to be aware of what we're doing.
I just want to say Mr. Stokes is not here today, but I'm sure that he and the board would want to work with the city, as they have with the other three SROs, to continue this moving forward, you know, at the end of the session, at the end of this biennium, if there's not, you know, another funding source.
Okay. John?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just want to echo what Brad said. It doesn't need to be said in some ways, but it does need to be on the record, so it does need to be said. I think this is the kind of thing that we'll want to see our community do for the long term.
Okay. Other comments? Any other public comments? Come on up. What's your name out there, Emiliano?
Thank you. Emiliano Carrillo for the record, right?
Yep.
As a high school student, I witness students using the narcotics a lot in the hallways and in classrooms. Being exposed to this, I've been traveling throughout many countries with my parents, and being here is the first time I've ever seen actual high school students use these types of products. I want to ask the deputies, how would you personally approach these students on these topics so that they don't hinder the middle school students or the elementary students in the future? Seeing that high school students are the purpose of image and example for these younger people.
Okay. So, how long have you been in the high school district here?
I've been only here a year and a half now.
Okay. Do you ever find it convenient to talk to one of the SROs there at the high school?
I have. I have mentioned it to some teachers and some SROs. And I can't really remember the names because
that's all right.
I'm a little shaky on names. They always tell me that I should speak about it more in meetings or in halls, but I've been finding myself really busy with academic work, being that I have to redo a lot of credits because some credits from other countries don't apply here for the United States educational system.
Jerome, what about that issue about finding kids who are using drugs in school? What do we, I mean, you guys get enough information from the students about that?
Yeah, you know, I commend the person to my left putting himself out there and coming out. And this is a tough topic. I'll tell you, whether it's drugs, addiction, or mental health, it's a community-wide problem, not just an enforcement problem. And I'll tell you, by us putting deputies into the schools and the sooner we can get to them, I think we can start that educational process so that good decisions are made in the future. But I'll just go back to what I said at the beginning. It is a community-wide effort where you have the nonprofits, the school districts, community members, the social services, school resource officers, juvenile probation and mental health that are all getting together to try and tackle this problem. That isn't just a Carson City problem. It's a problem that we see nationwide. You know, I don't know what the panacea is to address this issue, but what I can tell you is that we're doing everything in our power to help these young people make good decisions and make it not available to them.
Okay. Yeah, go.
So maybe I just have a general question. It might take the SRO to answer it. So let me say this differently. If the SRO witnesses in the hallway someone doing drugs, what happens? What's the process?
I'm not seeing him jump up, so I'll...
He did.
Oh,
he did?
Okay, then we'll let him handle it.
Because I think that gets to the heart of the question. What's the actual role of the SRO when he witnesses that activity?
Your last name? Korea. Okay, you go to the high school?
Yes.
Okay, this is my everyday life. Okay, this is what I do...
Don't run him a ticket.
More than 40 hours. This is what I do more than 40 hours a week. So one of my main jobs is to be present. So I am walking and meeting almost like Ronald McDonald because everybody knows me and I try to meet everybody and have a neutral to happy face and try to go to where I see where trouble might be brewing. Am I loud enough? So I consider myself like the white blood cells of the body. There's some kind of an invasion happening. I go over there and see what's going on. And so I float around like that, meeting kids, and every once in a while, there might be a little fight. There might be in the dean's office and maybe kids sitting there. So I'll sit with them and chit-chat with them and find out who's who and what's going on. So if I see something going on, like there's vaping, which is bad. It's against the rules of the school. I bring them to the deans. But for the most part, the deans bring them to me. And I have a test kit because a lot of stuff is just nicotine. And I could test it, and sometimes it comes up positive for THC. So in that case, since somebody else may have discovered it, then I go based on the dean's statement and a citizen's arrest situation where I could fill out an affidavit, send it on to Allie's people, or I can do a citation, which is, it's all the same consequences, or I could arrest them. So mostly I'm there to, for prevention, or I can take law enforcement action in those three areas. I go into classrooms when they let me and talk to kids and answer questions about law enforcement and try to explain why it's not like on TV or what their perception is. I could help change that. So.
Oh, sure.
So do you think any policies need to be changed, or do you think all the arrangements and the agreements are working right, or do you see some opportunities for improvement?
Well, I can't change laws, but all I know is I'm very busy, and I'm just glad that I've had Sergeant Mays with me for the past couple weeks to see just what we do. So I, me explaining it for 2 minutes in front of you might not do it justice with my choice of words and body language, but I think I've been there 4 years, and I think that it's changed greatly, and I think it's a way safer school, and I have great relations. I seem to know who's who, what's what. I take ownership. For instance, Safe Voice, someone mentioned about the suicide problem, concern. Safe Voice comes across, anonymous tip, child wants to kill himself, might be a joke, might not be. I'm on it right there because I know the kid because I've met him. I know his dad just from these years of doing it. And instead of letting patrol do it, which they're great guys, but they have the whole town to deal with, and I know these kids pretty much, so I'm on it right there. And instead of me going home and letting patrol do it, and it takes 4 hours because they have other things going on, I'm right on it, following through. And I talk to the mom, I talk to the dad, I talk to the kid. Lickety split, we're done. You know, and he's not in danger. So I think that just having us there, we created these relationships and the presence, and I think this the school is, I feel it's less dangerous than it's ever been. Less fights.
I just want to add, I am a former vice principal, middle school, former 6 years as a principal, and I see that the ratios, this is huge for us because we have over 2,200 kids at Carson High School alone, one officer alone on that campus. He has done an amazing job by himself, and one of the reasons for this grant was to expand, and the sheriff felt really strongly, as do the administrators, that we needed more support, that the three officers were just not enough. We have 1,200 kids at Carson Middle, 600 at Eagle Valley, and many more at the elementary schools, and only three officers was simply not enough to provide the kind of support that Deputy Dean is providing at Carson High.
Okay. Thank you, Dean. Okay. Jerome, another question for you, Jerome.
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
Would you go through what you're going to do with the $600,000 How much of that goes to salaries? How much goes to benefits? You know, I've had people ask me saying it's a whole lot of money for two people. So you could.
It is deep within the bowels of this grant. We'll get to those numbers right now and put them on the record.
On page 175.
And we worked closely with the Sheriff's Department on this part of the budget. We made sure that we were closely working with Casey Otto and the business manager so that we had the accurate figures and the cost and the increase in salary for year two. So it also includes, you know, all of the benefits pieces, the PERS, all of that. And I believe it's some of the equipment, uniform allowance, some of those things as well are all in
so
there.
So is that number a two-year number or a
yes,
one-year number?
2 years.
All right. That's what I wanted to hear. Because a lot of people are saying, you know, 1 year, that's a lot of money for two folks. So, okay. Got it. All right. Anything else? Public comment? Anybody want to weigh in on this one? Allie, you're not allowed to. Anybody? I don't see any board. Are we ready for a motion?
Yep, I got it. I move to approve the interlocal agreement between Carson City and the Carson City School District, creating one new sergeant position and one new deputy sheriff position within the sheriff's department dedicated as school resource officers.
Second. There's a motion and a second on the motion. Discussion? Hearing and seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Carried. Thank you, Valerie. Give our best to the school district over there. Okay. You guys working on the next quarterly meetings coming up, so.
You did the sheriff present.
Oh, thank you, sir.
All right, let's take up item 15, and then we'll take a break after that. Possible action regarding a contract for the Safe Drinking Water Act Analytical Services. Carol, I got it. How much is it? And is it budgeted?
Let's see. The request is for $240,000 for 3 years, and it is funded for the current budget, and then they have budget for the next 2 years.
So it is budgeted?
Yes.
Okay. Why do we need to spend this money?
Hi there. Eddie Qualieri. Good morning.
Good morning.
Everybody. So we have to comply with the state safe drinking water rules, we have a schedule that's laid out for us over, we even know it out to about 10 years. We have our schedule for the next 3 years, and we submitted that to the company that we use, Eurofins, and they gave us a bid for doing that testing. So it's all The required testing that's shown in the contract on the last page is all the contaminants we have to test for and submit to the state to keep our water system running.
All right. Anything you want to add, Darren? Want to add anything? You don't have to.
Not yet.
No. All right. Before we get to board comment, any public comment on this issue? I don't see any board. Brad, sorry.
Yeah, I have a question. There in this request is an additional $48,000 for potential additional testing or the potential new testing that might be required coming down the line. But we don't know that is a factor yet. My concern with that is that if something like that were to happen, that the board would probably want to be updated on that anyway. So my preference would be that in that circumstance, if we know that the actual testing is going to be $192,000 approximately, my preference would be to approve the contract for the $192,000. The additional funds, if we're going to be required to do the testing, then I'm certain that we're going to approve that, but we want to be updated as well, or I assume that we would want to be updated. So, again, I would just ask that on this item that we approve the contract amount and then request that if additional testing is required in the future that it comes back to us for the additional funding so that we can be updated at that time. And then secondarily, I think there was a correction on page one that there's no federal funding.
We get that? All right. Eddie, you look like you're studying there.
Yeah, I got it.
It's a good call, Brad. All right. Anybody else on the board? Okay, well, Brad, why don't you try a motion?
I move to approve the contract with where's the name? Eurofins Eaton Analytical LLC for a total amount not to exceed $191,680.
And to correct the
The third whereas on the first page of the contract to show that there are no federal funds utilized in this contract.
Second.
There's a motion and a couple seconds on the motion. Further discussion? Okay. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Carried. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. You know, just a cute little anecdotal story. When I was first elected mayor, we went through a safe drinking water issue about having to upgrade, you know, because we were out of compliance with the safe drinking water issue, and we got a discussion about why we had to comply with the federal and state drinking water acts. And I think Woody will remember this one. They told me, what happens if you don't approve this? You know, if you stay out of compliance, and Woody says you'll probably have to go to jail.
And so I said, and the person testified, says, yeah, why don't you go to jail? So anyway, it's what goes on in the world. It was fun. It was a fun day. All right. Let's take a break until about 10 o'clock. And we'll pick up the one we're going to bid on. Okay. Who's going to take over?
I will, Mayor. Dan Stuckey, City Engineer for the record. I'm joined by Carol Akers with Purchasing Contracts. So as you mentioned, this is a little bit of a unique item. It's not something we do every day at the Board of Supervisors, but it's going to be a public auction and sale of Brown Street Properties. That's what's before you. I wanted to just provide a couple slides to kind of give a summary and a recap of what's transpired since we last were in front of the board in September. So on September 19th, the board, you adopted a resolution declaring intention to sell these six parcels at a public auction under NRS 244-281 and 244-282. In that resolution, the fair market value was set and a minimum purchase price of the property at $300,000. And then in that resolution as well, you allow for the sealed written bids to be submitted to the city manager by 8:30 a.m. on today, October 17, 2019. So Carol has received those written bids. I'll go through how the process is going to work out today, but sealed and oral bids will be considered today at this meeting. And then I just wanted to mention that per NRS 244-282, there's some noticing requirements. It was posted in three public places for not less than 15 days before the meeting. And then we also published it once per week for three successive weeks in the Nevada appeal. So I did want to point that out. We do obviously a cash offer, but there's also a financing option, and I will go over that on this slide right here, Mayor. So we're going to be paying attention mostly to the highest price today, but I do want to mention that there are these five conditions of sale. And as you mentioned, Mayor, the offer may be all cash or for 25% cash down with financing. So we will work through that after today. Item B there, a $15,000 security deposit from the highest and second highest bidder will be required. The security deposit must be paid within 2 days of notification of selection as the highest and second highest bidder, and then the security deposit will be credited against the purchase price. Item C, the payment in full must be received from the highest bidder within 30 days of the date of the resolution approving the highest bidder. The city will hold the security deposit of the second highest bidder until payment is received from the highest bidder, and the city provides a quitclaim deed to the buyer for recording. The city will then refund the security deposit of the second highest bidder. And if the highest bidder fails to submit full payment within 30 days, the security deposit will be forfeited to the city as liquidated damages, not as a penalty, and the property will be offered to the second highest bidder. So I did want to go through that for the benefit of the board as well as any potential bidders that we have out in the audience. All right, so I've been practicing my auctioneer voice for the last week, so I'm ready to go. But no, I just wanted to lay out kind of the process that we see happening today. Carol has the sealed bid, as I mentioned, so she'll open those first and read those onto the record, who proposed as well as the amount. Then we'll have a call for oral bids and invite anybody that's a potential bidder to the front to sit at the table. to state their name for the record. Then we'll open the oral bidding session. Now, the first oral bid, and this is per NRS, must begin at a price exceeding the highest written bid by 5%. Subsequent oral bids must exceed the highest current oral bid by a minimum of $5,000. And then after we close out the open oral bidding, we'll identify the highest and second highest bidders. And then at the end, the board may then, there's two options, accept the highest responsible bid by resolution or reject any and all bids and withdraw the property from the sale. Is everybody, we're good to go? And I do have this screen up here, and I'll update the numbers on the fly so everybody is aware of the minimum bid and what's the current high bid, and we'll get ready to go. So with that, I'm going to have Carol open the written bids.
Great. Again, Carol Akers, Purchasing and Contracts Administrator. This is we've just received one written bid for the Brown Street property. Don't want that on the speaker. So the bid is being submitted by Dwight and Sandra Millard, and the written offer is $300,000.
All right, so if I could ask Mr. or Mrs. Millard or both of them to come up and just sit at the front table. All right, so now I'll ask the minimum or first oral bid would be an amount of $315,000. So I'll ask anybody in the audience who's interested in providing an oral bid to come up to the front. Okay. I guess it's going to make that a lot easier than I planned for. So so I guess we have one bid, $300,000. So with that, I'll turn it over to the board to discuss.
We take public comment on something like this or not? I don't know. This doesn't really lend itself to public comment. But
Mr. Mayor, Todd Reese, Deputy DA, for the record, you're correct. This doesn't really lend itself to public comment. That choice is up to you.
All right.
With your, just to be clear, for the record, your choices now are to accept the bid. You can reject the bid, and you can also take the property, basically take the property off sale, out of auction.
All right, board. What's your pleasure? You want to sell?
Yep.
All right. Motion's in order.
I move to accept the highest bid from Dwight and Sandra Millard and adopt resolution number 2019-R31.
Second. There's a motion and a second. On the motion discussion, hearing and seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay.
Okay, let's see. But I lost the thing.
Say again.
You said aye, but aye. Aye.
Yeah, it's not coming up for me either.
Okay. There it is.
There it is. Okay. Did you get yours, John? All right. All right. Go get the money.
Deposit.
I have nothing to say other than the fact that this is an area that we've built some units in, and so we're very happy to get it. I will tell you that at one time I owned some of this property, and we were going to build on it, and Citizens for Affordable Housing overpaid for the property next to me, so we made a deal and they bought me out. So I'm just coming around the block again on the second time. I'm going to collect $200 and go on. So we hope to build in there. Part of this property is general commercial, which we're going to try to put into housing as well. So we look forward to working with your planning staff and your engineering. There's some drainage issues in there, but we're very excited about it. I was going to retire, and I guess I've signed up for another 4 years. Thank you.
Very good. Thanks, boy. All right. All right. Let's. How'd that go? See, I did a good job on it, didn't I? Didn't do anything. So.
That was almost too easy.
Too easy. All right. Let me see here now. Let's take up item 17. This is a discussion of possible action to introduce on first reading an ordinance changing the zoning from tourist commercial to tourist commercial planned unit development for a tentative planned unit development proposing 227 RV lots for sale on property zoned tourist commercial located at 1400 Old Hot Springs Road, APN 008-123-40. Heather, go.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Disclosure. I'm sorry. I got it written right down here, too.
NRS 281A-420 requires me to disclose a conflict of interest and abstain from voting when I have a disqualifying conflict. In my private commitment, I am employed by Nevada Health Centers, a nonprofit organization where I oversee land purchases. In that capacity, I have negotiated on behalf of Nevada Health Centers the purchase of a parcel owned by Research Investments, LLC, and that transaction is currently in escrow. It is my understanding that Roger Shaheen is a corporate officer of Research Investments and is also listed as the manager and owner, partial owner of Sierra Skies, which is the applicant for the zoning ordinance. Because of this relationship, I believe I have a disqualifying conflict, and therefore I will not be voting on this matter.
Okay. All right. Any other conflicts, disclosures? Anybody? All right. Now go. Thanks.
Thank you. Heather Ferris for the record. As I'm sure you all recall, in January of this year, the Planning Commission approved a special use permit for an RV park with 277 RV spaces and amenities with a maximum stay of 180 days on the subject parcel. Neighboring property owners appealed the Planning Commission's approval, and at its April 4th meeting, the Board of Supervisors upheld the Planning Commission's approval with an additional condition clarifying the 180-day stay. The applicant is now requesting approval of a tentative commercial planned unit development for an RV resort with 227 individual RV space lots for sale and common area parcels with open space and amenities. As proposed, RV space lots may also be rented when owners are not utilizing them. In general, a planned unit development is very similar to an overlay zone. Uses allowed in the commercial and industrial planned unit developments are limited to permitted uses within the underlying zoning. A recreational vehicle park is an allowed use in the tourist commercial zoning, with a maximum stay of 30 days subject to completing a major project review and 180 days subject to approval of a special use permit. In addition to the PUD requirements, all of the supplemental standards for RV parks must be met unless a different standard is set by the PUD. The development is well under the allowed density for the supplemental standards for RV parks, which allows for a maximum of 30 RV spaces per acre. The applicant is proposing a density of 5.88 RV spaces per acre. The municipal code allows for an applicant to request modifications to Carson City's land use regulations otherwise applicable to the subject property. This allows for regulations applicable to the PUD to either be more or less restrictive than the underlying zoning. The applicant is not seeking to modify any of the allowable land uses, but they are seeking three modifications to standards. First would be the lot size. So the tourist commercial zoning has a minimum lot size of 6,000 square feet. As is common with planned unit developments, the applicant is seeking a reduced parcel size, so the minimum parcel size would be 3,275 square feet. Additionally, they're seeking a modification to the parking requirements. Parking requirements for RV parks are not specifically listed in Division 2 of the development standards along with all of the other parking requirements. The municipal code does require parking for one vehicle or one recreational vehicle per RV space, but it does not address any additional parking for guests. The applicant is proposing parking for one RV and two additional vehicles per RV space lot. The car or truck parking space would be, one would be used for parking the lot owner's tow vehicle and the other one would be used for guest parking. Additionally, there would be 35 parking spaces provided in the center of the development near the clubhouse and a welcome center. And then finally, they are requesting a reduction in the number of restrooms and showers required for RV parks.
As proposed, all recreational vehicles permitted within the development will be fully contained, including a full restroom with a toilet and a shower for the occupants of the RV. The applicant is requesting a reduction in the number of restrooms and showers provided throughout the development. The accessory buildings, including the clubhouse, sales office, and cafe, will include restrooms, and then shower facilities would also be included in the clubhouse. And the intent would be for the RV to serve as the primary bathroom and shower facilities for the occupants of the resort. RV space lot owners and or paying guests would be limited to a maximum of 180-day stay, and as conditioned, will be required to vacate and unregister for a minimum of 30 days. An owner's association or similar entity would be established to maintain all of the common areas and amenities. Amenities would include a sales office and welcome center, gatehouse, clubhouse with restroom and laundry facilities, maintenance building, pool, tennis court, pickleball court, cafe, and nine-hole putting golf course, as well as open space. The RV lots will be able to be improved by the owners, including landscaping and the ability to construct small accessory structures, including an outdoor kitchen with a grill, a fire pit or fire ring, and a coach house. So coach house, as proposed, is a maximum of 12 feet by 16 feet in size. It may include a restroom, washer and dryer, wet bar, and or seating area. Coach houses are intended to be accessory to the RV, and there would be no full living quarters provided within the coach house. Each RV space lot will have full water, sewer, and electric hookups. The applicant is proposing development in two phases. Each phase, of course, would include the construction of the necessary infrastructure, and phase one would include all of the buildings and amenities, along with 132 RV lots. Phase two would include the remaining 95 RV lots. Municipal code requires a planned unit development to set aside 30% of the gross area of the site for open space. In total, the development requires 11.58 acres of open space. There's over 12 acres of open space, including 9 acres of common open space, improved with recreational amenities, as well as open areas with landscaping throughout the development. And then additionally, each RV space would have their own open space as well. As with the special use permit, primary access to is proposed from Old Hot Springs Road with an emergency secondary access to the west connecting to Holly Way, which is at the top of your screen on this slide. Additionally, the Planning Commission recommended allowing trash pickup to utilize Holly Way as well, and you can reference condition 29 on page 270 of your packet for the language for that. The public comments that we received two prior to the Planning Commission meeting, and those are included in your packets. And then we did receive a handful of public comments at the meeting as well. But I wanted to focus on three of the main issues that were raised. First, the 180-day stay. There was concern that there would be no limit, and if there was limitations to the length of stay, how that would be enforced. So as we discussed at the appeal hearing for the special use permit, the enforcement of such a regulation would first fall to management of the resort. If there's an issue that's brought to the city's attention and the issue's confirmed, we would pursue enforcement action via code enforcement. And we do have the conditions of approval for the planned unit development as well. The condition that the Planning Commission has recommended is very similar to the condition that the Board of Supervisors developed during the special use permit appeal hearing as condition 46, and you can find that on page 272 of your packet. It reads, owner and or guest stays may be no longer than 180 days continuously. Owners and or guests must vacate the park, remove all personal property unless stored in the coach house, and be unregistered for a period of 30 days prior to being able to return. For the purposes of this requirement, a 180-day stay is considered to be continuous unless the tenant vacates the RV park for a minimum of 30 days in aggregate during that period.
So if I buy one of those lots, could I stay there for six months and then I have to vacate for 30 days, so I'm going to come back, even if it's me?
Yes, that is the way that the condition is written, and that's essentially what staff and the Planning Commission put forward after hearing from the public and the board during the special use permit appeal hearing.
Okay.
Second issue that was raised is airport safety, as you all know. That's been raised on several occasions with regard to this property because of its proximity to the airport. So staff has consulted with the airport manager regarding this project as well as previous projects and has incorporated all conditions of approval that they've requested. Starting on page 270 of your packet, the conditions include condition 28, which requires a refuge storage and disposal plan. Condition 35, which requires FAA review of construction near the airport. Condition 36, requiring signage be posted within the resort to notify guests of the proximity to the airport and the potential for noise and low-flying aircraft. Condition 39, requiring an navigation and noise easement, which will notify all future owners of the proximity to the airport and the right of the overflight in the airspace above and in the vicinity of the project. And condition 42, which requires signature of a disclosure at check-in, notifying guests of the proximity to the airport and the possibility for low-flying aircraft and noise. And then finally, there was concern raised as to whether or not this project was in compliance with the tourist commercial zoning and the definition of RV park. So, as I touched on earlier, a planned unit development functions essentially as an overlay zone. The allowable uses are limited to those uses allowed in the underlying zoning district, and an RV park is allowed within an underlying within the tourist commercial zoning district. So essentially, yes, it is consistent with the tourist commercial zoning. And then with the recommended conditions of approval, the development is still transient in nature, according to our code, and allows for the rental of spaces and limits the development or the stays to 180 days per condition 46, which I just discussed. So it is consistent with both tourist commercial and the definition of RV park. So the Planning Commission reviews requests for tentative plan unit developments and makes recommendations to the Board of Supervisors. At their September 25th, 2019 meeting, the Planning Commission voted 6-1 to recommend approval of the tentative planned unit development. Commissioner Tingle was the dissenting vote, and she indicated her reasons for voting no were that the issues related to proximity to the flight path were not adequately addressed, and the traffic study was not adequate and that it did not adequately address impacts to Research Way, College Parkway, and Old Hot Springs Road. The Board of Supervisors is authorized to approve a tentative plan unit development, which requires adoption of an ordinance. Therefore, the request before you today is introduction of the ordinance. A memo is included in your packet starting on page 267, and that outlines all of the conditions of approval as recommended by the Planning Commission. Additionally, staff did have some corrections and clarifications to those conditions, and that's also included in the memo. Rachel Kreider with RCI is here on behalf of the applicant, and I'm available for questions. But before I hand it back to the board, Stephen Pote with Development Engineering wanted to speak to the traffic study regarding this project.
Okay. Stephen Pote with Development Engineering for the record. As Hope pointed out, Heather pointed out, Hope Tingle was concerned about that traffic impact study, so I wanted to articulate what we actually received in that. So staff actually originally found that the application was deficient The special use permit didn't have a full traffic impact study. They had a memo stating that the triggers were not met. And when they came back in for the tentative map, staff realized that the trip generation that they had used was low. So we had them use a higher trip generation that was a more appropriate number. They originally used a campground trip generation, and then we had them use like a recreational home trip generation after that. So we had them analyze the intersections of College and Gonai, College and Research, Old Hot Springs and Gonai, Old Hot Springs and Research, Old Hot Springs, and the new driveway. So they found that all of those intersections were going to have a passing level of service with the current traffic volumes, which they actually went out and took counts in August. And they projected future traffic volumes for the year 2040 and found that those intersections still had passing level of service. They also looked at crosswalks and all of those intersections, with the exception, obviously, of the driveway, which doesn't exist yet, and the intersection of Gonai and Old Hot Springs had crosswalks at all four legs. Gonai and Old Hot Springs has crosswalks on the west and south, so essentially where the traffic from this project is anticipated to go. Additionally, we reviewed their trip distribution and the anticipated growth. Staff felt comfortable with that. We also added a condition, however, for the applicant to study the turning movements at those intersections so that we could be sure that RVs could actually make the turn without going into opposing lanes. So with that, I'll turn it back to the board.
John, Supervisor Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just want to be sure I understand. In the move out for 30 days, the person moves out or the unit and the person moves out?
The person, their personal property.
That's what I'm asking about. The personal property, which includes the RV.
Their personal property, which includes the RV.
That's what I thought.
In the event they have a coach house, they could store some of their personal property.
Yeah. I'm just clarifying what I thought I understood. Thank you.
Why would someone buy this?
Rachel Kreider, Resource Concepts. There's actually a pretty large market for, or I should say an underserved market, for these large motor coaches throughout the country. There are not any of these sorts of resorts in this area, although they exist in lots of other parts of the country, Oregon, Arizona, Florida, the Carolinas, Las Vegas. So oftentimes these folks with these really large motor coaches are underserved by the standard RV resorts that are already out there. They enjoy an RV lifestyle and treat it almost like a vacation home. So they might spend their winter, say, in a resort in Arizona, and then they're looking for, then they might go home to, you know, wherever their house is for a couple months, and then they might look for somewhere to go for the summer. So this is the great spot that they're looking for a summer vacation home, essentially, but with their motor coach. And they want to actually have that lot to purchase. They can improve it how they want. So Heather mentioned the motor coach, or the motor coach houses, which are essentially an accessory use. They're most often used for entertaining. So they might have some social time with their neighbors. Maybe they have family members that are coming and staying in the resort as well and visiting while they're there. But a lot of these folks like to own their space, and then they're assured that they have this same space that they can come and improve how they would like, within limits, of course. And it's always available to them. The market for this are folks that have the means to have a purchased RV site, a large motor coach. They might have a purchase site in various resorts throughout the country.
So just neither here nor there, but how do you figure the real property tax on lots like this?
Well, they are going to be separate legal parcels, so they would be assessed.
Do they take into account? I mean, are you asking that they take into account that you can't use it for 30 days a year?
I can't answer that. I don't think it matters because it's just going to be, you know, the property improvements. you know, I should say that's not my area of expertise, of course. But while that leads to another point, is that while the property owners can only use it for 180 days at a time, those sites then, if the owner chooses, can be put into a pool to be rented out by the resort administration.
Just so long as they don't they understand, if this gets approved, that they're not going to get a real property tax break because they're only they have to be off for 30 days.
Correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Is the owner the developer here, so they understand that?
I'm representing the developer, but that's understood that they are going to be taxed at whatever rate is applicable to that
fee,
property.
At the full fee amount, not yes. A reduced fee.
Yes.
All right. Supervisor Bunkowski, Brad.
Stephen, do you have the level of service numbers for 2040?
I do. So they had, at 2040 with the project, College and Gonai is C in the AM, D in the PM. Looks like PM is the worst case for all these soil redos. College and Research is a D. Hot Springs and Gonai, C, B, A, and A. Hot Springs and Research, A and B. Hot Springs and the driveway is an A.
Okay, so minimal impacts. Okay, thank you.
Lori.
So I just want to dive in a little bit more on the rental with the individual owner having a lot, and I think I just heard you slightly say something, but do you picture that this is going to work like a timeshare, so I own a timeshare and I don't use my week or I don't use my 30 days or whatever? You're saying that there'll be an actual management office to control all the rules, so I can't individually as the owner rent it myself outside of a management company?
You're correct. Each owner does not, it's not going to be like an Airbnb situation. Any rental would be only through the resort administration, not through individual owners. And those owners can choose either to opt in and let their spaces be rented when they're not using them or not.
And that will be covered in it'll have CC&Rs?
Yes, those will be within the CC&Rs.
Okay, because I really want to make sure it's not anything on a condition that can be in there to ensure that that's in the CC&Rs. What I don't want is to allow the individual owners to just start renting out the spaces. If that makes sense, what I'm saying, because
yes.
I think it changes the whole dynamics for the neighborhood.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it doesn't guarantee that people know they can only stay 180 days.
Yeah,
so I really like to see that somehow that's, we come up with some language, but that has to be included in the CC&Rs.
Yeah, and one of the conditions I know is that the CC&Rs have to be approved by the city prior to the final map recording.
But we have to tell him to have it in it,
yes,
so he knows to review for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, I just would like something to that nature.
Supervisor Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. That brings to mind another question. During your presentation, you were talking about if it becomes an issue and gets to the city, and it's confirmed. And when you say that, how do we confirm it at the city level?
So typically when we get a complaint on something, it goes to the code enforcement, and the code enforcement officers would seek to confirm that is actually an issue. I would foresee this being one where we could ask management to provide registration documentation to prove how long somebody has been there.
Thank you.
Can you have a question? I definitely want it in the CC&Rs, and here's what's coming to my mind. So if I'm an owner now, I'm going to pay property tax on that parcel, but if it's being rented through the management company, then they're going to pay the tourism tax for renting. Is that correct? Right? The renter has to pay a tourist tax?
As long as it's within the time frame that the tourist tax is applicable, yes.
Right. So it needs to be through the management company to ensure that tourism tax returns are done and paid to the
CBB, so it needs to be through a management company. Otherwise, individual owners will never sign up and pay their 11% tax on their rentals.
Okay. Any other comments before I take public comment? Public comment?
Mr. Denny French, Carson City, Nevada. Mayor, supervisors, I fell in short on this again, but I'm trying to catch up and I'm not going to speak over my understanding. I didn't have a chance to check in. I'm looking at the map and I've walked the area before, and I'm not understanding how, if a person has it 180 days, the time that they're not there, then can they also, after they've utilized their 180 days, then can they rent for the rest of the year? So a stranger could live in their place, but they as owners are limited to 180 days, but the person renting could stay the remainder of the year?
180 days.
Anyone would be 180 days.
No matter what, you have 180 days. So if you use that or don't, that's your allotment. The next person doesn't gain on your number because of that. They then, as a renter, only have 180 days or someplace in there. They could
You want to clarify that?
Right. Any occupant of any site can only stay for a maximum of 180 days at a time. And then they have to vacate the property, so they can't just go to another space. They have to vacate the property for a minimum of 30 days.
Thank you. I have another question about the cottage houses. Will they have a set... Coach houses, thank you. Will they have inset foundation, structural place built, or will they be on the side of a shed on the zoning? Because different considerations as far as square feet of building on a property. But also, there's certain shed sizes that if you exceed that, then you're into a different tax type situation, my understanding. And then if that's so, if they can exceed or what space they stay in on that, will they have indoor plumbing, perhaps small kitchenettes? Will they have other built-in facilities that won't be roll-away, that they will be permanent on that location? I'd like to know how that works. Also, I have concerns about those big vehicles running out that area and the limited exit plan that they have there because of the location.
So the coach houses would be limited in size to a maximum of 12 feet by 16 feet. The architectural standards would be reviewed by the architectural committee or homeowners association. So there would be architectural standards associated with that. And then they would have the ability to have plumbing, but no full-time living facilities. So they might have a wet bar, a bathroom, a washer and dryer, but they can't have full living facilities within that coach house. It is accessory to the RV use.
Okay, well, thank you very much for the clarification.
Okay. Other public comment, anybody? Come on up. Brad is one.
Yeah, I would like to clarify that an owner could potentially use their site 10 to 11 months a year because they can be there 180 days, vacate for 30 days, and then come back. So I want to be clear on that. An owner is not limited to 180 days per year.
Right. Yes, ma'am.
Hi. I'm Pam Johnson from Carson City, and I have a couple of questions. One, this site map is different than ones I've previously seen, as in the west side, which is adjacent to my property, at one point had the green space and then RV storage. But on this map, it's immediately having RV lots. So I'm wondering when and how that changed, and
the west side's actually the top on this map.
Right, right.
I'd be happy to answer that.
Okay.
So you're correct that the previous site design was slightly different. Kind of overall, it's pretty similar. But in the previous plan, we did have an RV storage area along the west side, as well as a drainage ditch that runs along there that will be improved. So that part of this plan is still the same. There's still a large drainage ditch that will be improved, as well as what will be a drainage easement for the city along that drainage ditch. And then it's just a slightly different layout to make this fit. But the largest, or the RV lots themselves are a minimum of 90 feet from the west side property boundary. But there is no RV storage proposed along that side now.
Is there RV storage at all?
Not proposed at this time, no.
Okay, thank you. the second matter I want to discuss is at previous meeting in April, it was discussed the whole thing about the 180 days and leaving for 30 days and coming back again. And at that time, the discussion included the lots not having permanent structures, so that it was not a residential type situation. And the discussion I heard earlier was remove all personal effects when you leave. And now that seems to be changing. And I'm wondering how that came about and how this is going to prevent residential access for this whole development.
I'm not certain I understand that last one. What do you mean residential access? What do you mean by that?
Well, basically, a person can stay there for a year with a month's removal and remove all personal effects, personal properties. But now the proposal is to buy the lot, build a coach house that includes water, plumbing, and electric, and I don't see how that's complying with the transient nature of RV park.
Okay. Yeah, because I think a coach house, once if it's built, if this goes through, if it's built, that transitions from personal property to real property. So I think, you know, that wouldn't be moved. If somebody, under this proposal, that's my understanding of it anyway, it would not be moved. Because it's a real part of, once it's attached to the ground, it becomes real property. Is that something you don't want to see then happen? You don't want to see these coach houses built on there? And the reason for that is, why again, please?
Well, originally it was RV park, a transitional, transient nature for people to come in and appreciate the area and then leave again. And then we, as the neighborhood, were adamantly against the extended stay. And then when we finally got a compromise on extended stay with a 30-day leaving for 30 days and then being able to come back, it was with the condition that there would be no permanent structures there, no decks, no sheds, no patios, anything like that. And I'm wondering how it transitioned into this. Now we have people buying the lots and building things on the lots.
Heather Ferris again for the record. So this is a new application. The developers come in with different ideas. The coach house is intended to be accessory to the RV use. In every district, every zoning district, there's accessory uses. This would be one if the board were to approve it.
I can let Rachel clarify, but I don't believe we're talking about tough sheds and those types of accessory structures. We're talking about something more permanent that fits with the feel of the resort, that would look more like the clubhouse and other structures in the area. And then as far as the transient nature, it is as proposed with these conditions, it is as transient as the special use permit allowed for. So the special use permit allowed for a resident to come in, rent a space for up to 180 days, vacate the property, and come back after 30 days if they so choose. The same scenario could happen under the conditions as have been proposed.
Lee Plummel, Community Development. Just to add to that, I think what Ms. Johnson is saying is that these structures may lend themselves to people wanting to stay longer, but functionally it doesn't change anything before. With or without them, somebody, they could come in their RV and stay in their RV and shower in their RV and stay there for their 6 months, then take a month off and come back for six more months. So operationally, whether the sheds are there or not won't change things, but I think they're being, the applicant maybe addressed this, but I think they're being proposed as an additional amenity for the tenants.
Yeah, to add to that, that's absolutely it, is that they are an amenity. They would be subject to review from the Architectural Review Committee. So absolutely no tough sheds, not to pick on tough sheds, but, you know, no temporary nature structures that, you know, could potentially be an eyesore. You know, we understand that that's really the concern of the neighbors, is that it's going to turn into, you know, something in disrepair. And because of the nature of this development, that is absolutely in the interest of the resort owners and developers to not have that happen, that it maintain a high-quality development. The addition of the ability for the owners to put these structures on their properties really is just an amenity that's pretty standard with this sort of development. So if folks own their lot, say, in Arizona or Florida, and they're going to expect that same level of amenities when they come to a new resort. So that's really the driving force behind having that. And then another fine point, just to be absolutely clear, there are no bedrooms or sleeping facilities in the proposed coach houses. They're just accessory use to the main RV and the folks that are staying there.
Thank you. Basically, my concern is that, and I think you addressed this is a new proposal to the already existing development. And I guess that's the answer to my question, because the last meeting I was at, Planning Commission, the discussion included no permanent structures. So now we're coming around to this proposal, and I understand that's new on the agenda, and I hope you consider the neighborhood and the impact that would have on us. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Pam, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
So what I'm wrestling with in my mind, and I'm sure all of us do, is to look at the planning there, and the zoning says that I can have an RV park. So I guess what I'm wondering for the neighbors, which you would find more palatable. So I'm trying to picture myself living there, and if this is now changed to a much more upscale park, because now you're going to have an accessory unit, they're going to own the property lots themselves, versus a RV park that has people moving in and out weekly and just coming for weekends and potentially having just their parties in the nature of a campground. I happen to own an RV, so I want to let you know that I get what happens in campgrounds, and we all meet and there's 30 of us and we have dinner together and really have a nice time. So I'm trying to picture how you think this is better or worse, because I really think this is going to be better for the residential area than the campground that's much more transitional. So why do you think a transitional one would be in better in your interest? Because I think you're getting an RV park one way or another.
Exactly. And that's, first of all, the neighborhood is against the project in total. And secondly, the length of stay, we argued that it, not restricting the length of stay would then promote residents, permanent residents. And, I was just confused about how, when we talked at the Planning Commission, that the discussion again was no permanent structures. And now the purchase of the lot and building of the permanent structures totally counters that, but I understand that now that it's a new proposal. I really can't speak to how one would be better than the other or not, because we're opposed to the whole thing.
I appreciate that. I was really looking to see if you actually had any finite, if we've gotten past we're going to approve an RV park, why shouldn't I approve this one versus the other? I was truly looking for, is there something that makes this less palatable? You know, and why. So thank you so much for just, you're just against having the RV park. Thank
exactly.
you.
Exactly. I really appreciate I do that. Have one other question. And at one point there was part of a discussion about people wanting to stay the 180 days and if there would be a particular area in the park that those people would stay as opposed to people coming for a few days or a week. For the lots that will be sold, are they in a particular part of the park?
All of it, right?
All of the lots will be sold. All of the lots will be sold. So ideally, all of the lots would be sold, yes.
Did I hear 227 lots to be sold and the rest would be?
So this proposal is 227 lots. The previous proposal under the special use permit that was before the board in April is 277. So it is reduced in density by 50.
I got it. So the entire development will be 227 lots as opposed to the 277.
That's correct.
And all of those will be up for sale. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Mr. Barrett?
Yes, I have a question too for you.
Sorry, yeah. Pam, I think Mr. Barrett has a question.
I'm trying to understand where you're coming from as well. I also have a small RV, and I understand that part of the concern. Are you concerned but not saying that you worry, even though there will be no bedrooms in the coach houses, that people might move their unit down the road for 30 days and come back and go back and forth and still use their property through that period of time rather than running it out for 30 days to somebody else? I'm trying to get what your concern is, that they would, you know, put a cot in there or whatever. I don't know why they would, but
right.
Is that your worry?
No, that hasn't come to my concern, but again, I was at the April meeting, and they said no permanent structures, and now we're talking about permanent structures, and I just wondered how that all transpired. So I think I have my answer now.
Thank you, Pam. We really appreciate
it. I can go.
Thank you. All right, other public comment? Anybody else want to weigh in? Board, we're ready for a discussion. We're ready for a motion. Who wants to make a motion? Anybody? Give it a try with your addition to it, maybe.
I move to introduce on first reading bill number 109, adding a condition that requires the owners to go through the management company for any rentals.
of their property and allow the district attorney's office to make that conforming language.
To clarify, I think we can modify condition 14 to require that that be included in the CC&Rs.
Okay, so you're okay with that change, all right? All right, there's a motion and there's a second on the motion. Discussion? Hearing and seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Carried, okay.
One abstention.
Thank you.
I don't have my computer, so Mark, you can stay, please.
Getting on vacation early. All right. All right. Let's take up the next item. This is the presentation and discussion regarding motel task force.
Good morning again, Lee Plemmel, Community Development Director. I'll be giving you a brief overview of the report that's in your packet today on the Motel Task Force. And as you can see, I have some other departments that are here and around that are available to answer questions if you have any specifics, or can help me out if there's something that I can't answer regarding this. So just as some high-level background real quick, since 2014, we've coordinated inspections of certain motels with various departments all going at one time. Generally speaking, the motels that have been chosen for this type of inspection have been ones that raise to the level of getting the most complaints, whether it be to the sheriff's office or health department or code enforcement. So that's how certain motels have been selected. I just want to go over briefly, give you an update on the open cases that we have now, because there's actually some updates even since last week a week and a half ago when the report was finalized in terms of some of the ownership and things like that. But let me start first by saying we came before you about 6 months ago, a little bit more. We commit to reporting to you about every 6 months on the activities. Since then, we have closed one case. That was the Roundhouse Inn. It's under the closed cases number 3. And, the initial inspection was in August 2018, and it was closed in August 2019. So you can kind of see through initial inspections, getting a list, giving them a certain amount of time through various working with them as they've made progress. But that's something where ownership has now come in and checked the list off. So, we're happy to report that one of them has been closed out and with all the improvements done. Now, let me just go through a real quick update on open cases that we still have, that we have written citations on, either that are still open currently or otherwise in the past. And starting with the Whistle Stop Inn, this is one that's been ongoing for a long time, and we continue in it, and that's basically on hold right now with the district attorney's office and they being the ownership's attorneys are working. We're not sure who to cite at this point. I guess the way to put it, there's a ownership guardianship issue going on there. So we're waiting for that to be resolved to move forward with any additional citations and inspections on that site. But that's with the caveat that we have responded to complaints out there in the meantime. That doesn't mean we're not doing anything. And actually on all of these, in between, as these cases are in the courts and we get more complaints on individual units, whether it be bed bugs and they call the health department or other specific issues, hot water heaters go out. We've been spending quite a bit of time on some of these properties, continuing to respond to complaints on these, and that including the Whistle Stop Inn. Moving on to the Silver Queen. This is one that where there is a case with an active citation in the court with the next court date due for November. We're not sure what's going to happen in November. This property has actually sold from the ownership that received the citation.
It's sold, and actually the owner now is actively, has contacted the building department, is actively fixing things, but is also planning on selling the property, actually has it in the works, so that ownership's going to transfer in early November to that one. So we're hopeful, not sure what's going to happen with that in court in November. We'll find out. We'll work with the DA's office on that. But we're hopeful with the new ownership that they actually start to make some improvements to that building. That's frankly has been one of the worst ones in terms of the conditions and the ongoing problems at that one. Like I said, they're actively working on it now. And in fact, that transitioning to the next item and the next two items, I'll skip ahead to the 50 flats, number four. That's that's the Silver State Inn, former Rand Inn on Rand Street. That current ownership is almost done with their improvements. They've been working with the city. They've been coming into the building department they have the permits. They're working on it. They should be completing that soon. That is the new ownership for both, potentially for the Silver Queen, and I think they are the current owners of the former Nolan Inn now as well. Former Nolan Inn, former Back on Track Inn. If you notice, as soon as they got ownership of it, they started painting right away to get that done before the winter. I think that's a positive step. That's something where actually we've talked to them, just improving the outward appearance of that would be a really good first step. Then they could work inside during the winter, but, they own the Nolan Inn now, are working on that, almost done with the Rand Inn, and we expect them to take ownership. We've been told they are going to take ownership of the Silver Queen shortly, and hopefully that relationship continues. Apparently they have contractors. There's been contractors with other owners that have been reluctant to take these projects on, but they've been working, they've had contractors that have worked with the city to get some things done. So those are the motels that the group has been working on. As I noted, not only, you know, departments still take complaints and have been addressing other, fire department still does inspections on other motels. I know the health department, I think Nikki's out of town and Bob recently retired, but I know they've been continuously responding to complaints at other places too. So it's not that motel enforcement hasn't been ongoing, but in terms of the effort of the coordinated stuff, so far it's been limited to this, and we haven't been able to get to any additional hotels. And again, as I said, I think these are the ones that warrant the attention at this point. We've discussed some other ones that we might be next on the list, but they're just currently not as bad, and we want to focus our attention on getting the improvements here. And as you can see, it kind of takes reinspections. And this is generally true of things in code enforcement, writing a citation doesn't fix the problem. It sets a court date for a couple months from that date to go to a judge and say, are you guilty or innocent, set another court date. So the best way for us to get compliance in all code enforcement things is to continue to work with property owners to incrementally get there, because going through the courts is not always the best. In fact, on one of these, on the prior owners, it's like, no, I'm not going to go any. We gave them the deadlines. I'm not going to go any faster. Write me a citation. I don't care. So they have the they got a citation. But anyway, I'll conclude my presentation with that. Does anybody else have anything want to add? But if you have any questions of anybody, please let us know.
Okay, questions, Lori.
So, I see that most of these are like constantly being sold or in and out and back and forth and whatever. But how does a purchaser potentially know there's violations on that property?
So these cases, in all of these cases, the citation, the corrections list has been recorded with the property. So in all of these cases, when the ownership is transferred, that new owner has had that, has come to us and with that corrections list and asked us about it and talked to it about it. So we do record it.
It's recorded?
Yeah.
And then, if I may,
mm-hmm, sure.
Now that you guys all have been working on the processes, what I'd really love to see is where do you think we can make improvements or changes to help speed this up? I for the life of me, cannot understand how somebody can be without a hot water heater and having decent living conditions for 3 years. I don't understand that. So I don't know the answers either, but I would love it if we could come together to say where in the process can we have a different ticket or a different fast track for some of the items. I mean, maybe paint isn't a fast track item, but certainly a hot water heater ought to be. I mean, I'm trying to just understand how they get 3 years to fix it.
To stay on your hot water heater example, actually those are things that rise to emergency and immediacy, and those are the types of things that get fixed. That's not okay to continue to operate your motel without that. So that's an immediate life safety. The other codes apply where we have required them to get hot water heaters fixed. So there's not an instance where it's been years that we haven't had hot water. However, there are instances where we have continuing problems with that hot water heater, even after issuing a citation and getting them before the court and the court telling them they got to fix this stuff and still having these issues along the way. So I don't know the answer. I don't know how to address that, except working with the DA's office and creating more citations, creating more court cases. I don't know how that fixes it because we're already citing them and getting them in the courts and we still get non-compliant, continued problems, I should say.
Maybe I can ask even then a different question, and I'm not saying we would or we wouldn't, but should we be reviewing whether we should allow them to continue? Because right now they're non-conforming uses. Is that, am I right? So they're not currently zoned to be able to do. They were there before we changed the zoning rules.
In terms of the long-term stay.
So
right.
Maybe at some point we have to look at changing that. I don't know. To say, look, this is you're not keeping up with the properties. They're not good places to inhabit. So just a thought that I just throw out there for discussions.
And you started off with, you know, where I thought you were going at first was maybe, the other option is to take away business license and start that process. I think at this point where we are with new ownership on these, I don't recommend that we're to that point with any of these that we want to initiate process to revoke business license. I could say we've got very close with a couple properties along the way. With, again, the issue of that is actually closing these down is taking the number of people that do live in those places and figuring out what we're going to do with them. As I mentioned, health isn't here, but they could tell you over the last year, they don't have another room to put people right now. So it's a difficult situation, but it is a consideration of where are people going to go if we do shut down a place and they have to leave that premises. And we've discussed maybe it's incremental, so it's a little at a time, and that's a possibility. But again, at this point, I think we want to give new ownership on these coming up a chance to actually fix up the properties. Because as you could see, writing citations is not necessarily the best, or not necessarily getting full compliance.
You know, it's not like these places where there are difficult living conditions. They're making money on these things. And I guess the idea is how much money they want to spend on making sure their property is brought up to a livable standard that meets current law that says you can't rent an uninhabitable piece of property to someone. Anyway.
And they are motels. They are not apartments. They have business licenses as a motel, so they fall under those applicable NRS, NAC
codes as motels.
Motels don't count as, even an extended stay motels don't count as a living entity or living unit for purposes of state law requiring it to have a rentally habitable housing? I mean, Chapter 40 has conditions. You know, you can offset rent and you can not pay rent if you're living in housing that is less than habitable, call it that.
Yeah. Well, my point was that those motels require places to be livable, and they require they may require services. Something to consider, like Reno has gone to, and which is they adopted, you know, some minimum. Just what comes to mind is like they have to provide weekly linen service. They're a motel, even though they're long stay. So they've made them provide not only fix it up, but provide certain minimum things that a motel that they need to provide as a motel. So that could be something we could look at as well.
Okay. Brad, I'm sorry.
So I'm just going to throw this out there because I know it's Bob's favorite subject, which is affordable housing and our ability through redevelopment to condemn properties like this and have the city run them under a housing authority. So that would take a lot of work. It wouldn't be easy, but I think that maybe at next year's, coming up in January at our strategic planning session, that should be something that we should at least put on the table and discuss, because this would provide us an opportunity. So in other words, Lee, to answer your comments earlier, if we give a property owner 6 months to make improvements based on a citation and they don't do it, then that would trigger some process for redevelopment to potentially look at condemning that property and purchasing that property.
Well, actually, you know, I think that's well worth discussing, because I think housing authority, not just for the issue we're talking about here today, but from the creation of affordable housing, having a housing authority that can do the grant applications and actually be a recipient of grant monies, who can bird dog those things, is probably something we ought to look at. Okay. All right. Anything else? Okay. Any public comments on this issue? You're doing well today, Denny. You're hitting about 6 out of 10. Come on up.
Thank you, Mayor and Board. I don't like to put my 2 cents worth in, actually. It's very hard for me to be here, but this touches pretty close. I'm busing and I'm walking and I'm relating to public that are living out on the streets instead of living in some of the flea bags and the mited areas and the places without the water and places without the heat. And they're afraid to say anything. They're not going to come to anybody. They could be thrown out at a moment's whatever anyway. Should they complain or have any kind of considerations in that way, they have no alternative or options. So I just wanted to mention that aspect of it. And I think the idea of giving a certain amount of time and then perhaps considering the zoning and the housing to the development that way would be the best route if they're not going to do it. And there's so many people out there that are telling me stories, and I just go, oh, my gosh, no wonder you'd rather sleep under the tree and freeze or be wet. Gotcha. But so this is a tough situation. I hope that if there's somebody in there that needs to let you know there is an issue, that they will, and that you won't give them months and months, because it's already been years and years in some of these motels, hotels that aren't compliant and aren't even making an attempt to. So thank you very much.
Keep your eye on it, because we agree with you. It's a difficult issue, but it's one that we got to address.
I appreciate it very much. And
people who live in those buildings, in those places, are human beings, and they deserve to be treated just like human beings, they're all the rest of us. And putting them in flea bags is not the way we should be doing it. It's my own 2 cents.
Every day I've got the option to walk or to ride or to drive. I feel blessed. going home to my own restroom, my own house, my roof over my own head. I feel fortunate. So thank you all very much for taking this seriously. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks. Any other public comment?
You may ask just a general question, Lee. What Denny brings up there, I mean, this whole thing started just off of, I did go to a school and have a young lady tell me all about her living conditions, which is what brought this issue to the table that I worked with supervisor about on. It all came from a complaint from a young lady about not having hot water for a year. She did not have hot water, and they never complained because they would be kicked out. So I know one of our rules in code enforcement is the person has to disclose their name for a complaint. So I just wonder also for us to think, what can we do to allow people in these hotel motels an opportunity to discuss that there's truly a improper living condition without us having to disclose to the motel owner that Johnny in room 12 made the complaint. So I was fortunate in this case, I took the complaint forward, so the name on the complaint was me. So that protected the family. But I just wonder what methods we have. And so I just invite anyone out there, you can call me and I'll be happy to send your information forward. But I just know that's one thing that people tell me about code enforcement is you have to put your name on the complaints, and then it's public information. So how do we help these people in these poor living conditions be able to speak up?
Well, in order, so that the name comes in order to take it to the court for the citation, I think is where it is. But we took, for the basic public safety, for the fire issues and for the building permit issues, it doesn't matter who it is. And I think it could be anonymous complaints. If it comes to their attention that there's these basic life safety things, they're going to go check on it. So people, if people want to bring stuff to our attention and not be anonymous, it may hinder some court ability, but that doesn't mean there's nothing we can do about it. So they should come in. Do you have something to? Jason with code enforcement might be able to add to that.
For the record, Jason Johnston with Carson City Code Enforcement. Supervisor Bagwell, to answer your question and to give further detail on when someone makes a complaint to our department, we do require them to give them their information, such as their name, their address, and where their complaint is. We need that sort of information to follow up with an inspection. But we also ask them if they request to remain anonymous. And we always keep that information anonymous per their request, unless the DA's office, through a court case, would ask us for that information. Then we just give their name and their information to the DA's office.
But the person that's going to court gets it in the discovery, right? I mean, they get the name.
I don't know.
Do they?
I don't know if they do or not. I think at that juncture,
do the research and let me know.
At that juncture, it seems to me like it's an issue not related to the complainant. It's an issue related to the underlying factual issues with respect to the quality of the living environment there.
Anyway. Mr. Mayor, Todd Reese, Deputy DA, for the record. I don't know the answer to that question off the top of my head, but I will consult with Ben and talk with Lee in code enforcement. And if there's procedures that we need to put in place to protect a particular person, then we can look into that.
Maybe they can use our fraud, waste, and abuse, which is a confidential one, and the public could, even though it would help, again, spur an inspection because it would come through the audit committee to say, hey, this property owner is not compliant or something. I don't know. Let's get together and see if we can't find a solution to protect these people, because I don't want them kicked out of their homes, but I want this stuff fixed. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments on the board? Anybody? Any other public comments on this issue? Thanks to code enforcement for getting out there. I mean, you know, as I always tell you guys, you don't live in an easy environment. We're well aware of that. Keep your spirits up. keep doing what you're doing, make sure that the living conditions of those who are less than fortunate have a good place to live. Okay? All right. Are you ready, City Manager? Let's take up the City Manager report.
I'm ready. All right. New building permits continue to come in at a steady pace. Permit valuation for September was $7.5 million. For a year-to-date amount of almost $118 million, with $82 million for residential and $18 million for both new commercial and industrial, and in commercial and industrial remodel and miscellaneous. On the residential permits, in the month of September, we issued 15 single-family detached and 6 single-family attached for a total for the calendar year of 238 residential permits issued. So the next three of 9 items that are scheduled for review by the Planning Commission on October 30th. In this first one, there was an approval last year to reuse the former Grandma Hattie's building for a casino. The owner is now proposing to demolish the existing building and construct a new building for the casino, and this requires modification of the approved special use permit. This is a tentative subdivision map and special use permit to create 42 single-family lots on Emerson Drive near College Parkway and the freeway. This is special use permit for a 126-unit apartment complex on the south side of Little Lane behind the post office.
Little Lane property is part of the Anderson. Was part of the Anderson Ranch at one point in time. Yeah. I think Anderson Ranch extended from where it is today on the west side, all the way to the river.
Wow. All right, the next is a building permit under review, and a permit has been submitted for a new bank that is to replace the former IHOP, which closed at the end of September. And the next one is a building permit under review for a new Dutch Brothers at the south end of town.
What's that going to do to the traffic out there?
Well, they get a lot of business, so.
Okay. Keep your eye on it.
Yeah. All right. The next is IFC activity from September 11th through October 2nd. Again, these are mostly just the filling of vacant positions and approvals to hire temporary contract employees through Marathon. Currently, we have 5 job postings that are still open, and the rest of these positions are in various stages of the hiring process. I'll just go to under general fund contingency. We approved funding a contract employee to help finance prepare their annual comprehensive financial report, and also to provide support to the other staff that is implementing the new ERP, the payroll portion of the ERP system. We also approved funding for a contract firefighter paramedic in order for them to attend the Firefighter Academy in anticipation of an upcoming vacancy. If they weren't able to do the academy now, the next one would be either 6 months to a year out. So we allow them to hire through Marathon. If the position doesn't become vacant, then the employee, we don't have an employee on our books at that time. The next, we approved a potential augmentation for the courts and alternative sentencing budgets for up to $30,000 for bailiff staff and jury fees. And this is due to the Supreme Court mandate that now allows defendants charged with domestic violence to receive a jury trial. So we're just going to wait on that until the end of the year and see what's needed, and we'll augment up to $30,000.
Yeah, just a second. NACO is And NACO is obviously looking at, they're having a seminar on what other jurisdictions are doing on jury trials for misdemeanors that relate to domestic battery. So somebody should go to that. I'm going to go to that. It's the next board meeting.
November 1st, I believe. So,
okay. All right, Lori, jump in there.
I think that's what I thought I read, something that Clark County did a change in one of their ordinances, so then it wasn't applicable. So I was just going to make that same recommendation as let's take a quick look to see if there's any ordinance change or something we can do to not have that issue.
Okay. The last item is we approved funding to replace the we approved funding for $136,000 from the Capital Projects Fund undesignated to replace outdated jail video security system. Approximately $33,000 was approved during the fiscal year 20 CIP for video system upgrades. But after working with the Sheriff's Office, working with IT, they contacted the vendor, and the only parts that they could get would be used parts from another business that was no longer using the system. So the system's outdated, they're no longer supporting it, and they basically said we'd be throwing this money away buying the old parts. So we approved $136,500 from the undesignated balance. The sheriff is using $30,000 of his restricted funds also to cover a portion of this, and then the $33,000 that was already approved.
How much is the total project?
$200,000.
So, Nancy, why did this item not come to the board? Because it exceeds $50,000, so...
We haven't entered into a contract yet, so once the contract... We'll bring the contract back to the board. And then the estimated undesignated balance is $363,115 in the Capital Projects undesignated account. And that's it.
Okay. Any further questions of the city manager or anybody on the panel there? Okay, I don't see any. Let's take up, are we ready to go to concluding issues? Let's take up non-action items, board members, reports and stuff. Anybody want to start? Go ahead, Brad. Supervisor Mankowski.
Wednesday, October 23rd in Marlette Hall at Western Nevada College from 1 to 4 p.m. There is a Carson River seminar that's open to the public. And so there will be all kinds of experts from conservation districts, RCI, Nevada and California River Project. So if you want to know anything about the Carson River and what's going on out there, it's open to the public. 1 to 4, October 23rd, Marlette Hall, Western Nevada College.
Anybody else? John?
Yeah, I just wanted to piggyback. I didn't want to bring this up during the discussion on the Motel Task Force, but when we look at that next time and in the next budget cycle, I'm still concerned and don't know that I totally understand the difference in the taxation between long stay and short stay, and I understand that crosses lots of motels, so it might be something, but it's probably something we should discuss at that juncture, too, because I've never quite understood how we got there.
Okay. Got that, city manager? Okay. Anything else from anybody? Sure. Going once. All right. Are we ready to adjourn? Anybody? Future agenda items? Shoot.
Yeah. Can we get an update on Capital City Liquidators?
On what?
Capital City Liquidators. Oh. Good idea. Anything else? That's a good move. Okay. Anything else? City Manager? Todd?
My only comment was to make sure you ask for a public comment one more time.
Okay. I'm glad you're looking at it, looking after us here. Okay, public comment, concluding public comment, anybody? Okay, I don't see any. So unless there's an objection, we will stand adjourned. Well, these guys are making a lot of bucks, man. I mean, I wouldn't